actually use that spectrum more efficiently than bigger providers that have to pay these other departments, and all those costs that they are paying, all these prices that are paying for spectrum, goes back into the users to pay that, whereas smaller providers don't have to carry that much part of that cost into that. And the second question would be, you've been talking about the digital dividend and the TV white spaces, but I guess white spaces as such apply to the whole spectrum. And as we know, or at least I know from my experience in rural areas, is that most of the spectrum that has been allocated nationally, as you were saying, to the mobile network operators is not being used there and could have a lot of value for these smaller operators.
Great, thanks Carlos. Thank you, Chairperson. So, that's a great question and something that's been looked at in other countries in the world. So, talking about the second question, are there spectral bands where we could use the white space concept? So, in Mexico, the network called Rizomatica, where they've actually allowed GSM bands to be used by smaller players where there wasn't good connectivity, cellular connectivity, to share that spectrum. The way one would share that spectrum could be, there could be many ways to do this. It could be on a licensed shared access model where a small GSM operator in a rural area could purchase exclusive use to that spectrum where it's not used in a rural area and provide a service. There are also ways of doing this perhaps with a geolocation spectrum database. And actually there's some researchers at Berkeley who looked at how to sense if GSM is being used and then use it in areas where it's unused, but obviously with the knowledge of the operator to make sure that there's no interference. So I think this is just the beginning. What we're seeing, the reuse of TV bands with dynamic spectrum access is only the beginning, I think, of a longer plan to reuse spectrum more efficiently in other bands, including GSM bands. So I think that answers only the second question. But the first one is kind of linked to that. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Dr. Johnson, we just have a situation we're trying to manage. We've got two people who are under pressure. Firstly is Lucanio, who needs to be back at the university. As you know, there are a lot of issues that are happening at the university in terms of the activities after the announcement by the minister. And I understand the representative of ISPA as well, Mr. Dominica, has got pressures of time. So I'm going to quickly ask you to
thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Lukani Somatebese, the acting president at the University of the West. So I was asked to speak about the challenges that students face when it comes to the cost of communication. And the first thing that I wanted to highlight to the House is firstly, what does ICT mean to students? And we all know that the generation between them is a global, or it's a digital generation, where we do anything and everything through ICT. So it is very important that we also recognize that young people are an online population, as well as we use information and ICT in order to access different types of information. But mainly I also wanted to highlight to the House what students in general use ICT for.
Yeah, unfortunately she was not able to give us the copies. So she brought something, we'll do make copies later for her presentation. Apologies for that, Ms.
So there's different uses that students access ICT for. We use it to share and exchange the learning experience amongst ourselves. We use it to access the web when it comes to our assessments and research. We use ICT to access our curriculum information. We use it to email our lecturers. We use it to access our web-based problems and developmental and combined assessments. We use it for supplementary and software for learning. We use it for dynamic feedback systems, as well as we access the web information in order to access information regarding our curriculum as a whole. But what are the challenges that we have? And, you know, as the latter speaker said, he said the problem is not access, but the problem is affordability. And it's the affordability that becomes a problem to the student population. I could use an example of acquiring a computer. That affordability of the computer is a problem in itself. The cost of acquiring the software is a problem in itself. And the cost of data is a problem. And that has been spoken about extensively in presentations that we saw this morning. But most importantly, we see our universities using public or shared sites such as libraries. But even those shared sites have a problem because the cost of accessing that site in its own becomes a disadvantage to someone who doesn't own a laptop or who doesn't have their own personal access to the internet or to ICT. We have issues such as privacy, qualitative issues, and safety, as well as convenience to the users. But most importantly, we see that the users of shared facilities are individuals who already have access to their own personal ICT-related tools. We also look at how we can improve these issues that we have. And the first thing is to improve our shared facilities, meaning that we gain more access to these facilities, we have more time to access these facilities, and more especially that they are affordable. But more especially, if we are to look at students who don't live on campus and who don't have access to Wi-Fi, and the latter speaker spoke about the benefits of Wi-Fi, how do we make sure that data is accessible to those students? How do we make sure that Wi-Fi is accessible to those students? But I won't go much into the benefits of Wi-Fi because the latter speaker spoke about how important Wi-Fi is. But in looking at the challenges that students have to accessing to communication, it was my duty to highlight that in order for us to have a smooth academic process or academic program, we need access to ICT that is available and is affordable. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation. Any comments, members?
Thank you. Wanted to know what discussions you've had with university management on establishing local networks, Wi-Fi, and perhaps helping you with hardware purchases, perhaps subsidized hardware, handsets, and tablets. Has there been any discussion with the university management?
Thank you, Chairperson. Speaking as the parent of the Georgian Law Service, this prepaid contract, she pays for it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there we are.
Speaking as the parent of a daughter that's at a university, I know she uses the law library for a lot of her work. You mentioned the facilities. I presume you're talking specifically about the university that you're at. On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you score those facilities just in terms of the hardware, the equipment available, the Wi-Fi, the quality of the Wi-Fi, and the environment? If you can just give me 3 scores on that. A lot of your presentation seems to be less about the cost of data and more about access, and I think Honourable Shin covered that, more about access to the equipment. I know Microsoft, for example, have subsidized software for students. Just to cover what Marianne said, Are there facilities available or funding available for the purchase of technology or hardware for students? Thank you, Chair.
Number
23.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
I would like to check how the situation in the computer lab, like the intake, like a certain number of students who will access the computer for an hour or so, and how many are you? And we're not going to assume that everyone has a tablet. We can say almost everyone, but no, it's not the case that everyone has a tablet or a cell phone with the required capacity to download the information we need. Also think of students who are doing research, and apart from the ones who are doing research, normally you will have to update information when you have an assignment. I would like to know also what is provided by NSFAS, just the tuition fee, or maybe the budget are included as well. Thank you.
Those are the comments, questions that members have. I think mainly is to just say from a student perspective, if you are to wake up and you do not have data, would that impact on your work? If you are not able to make a phone call, how does that impact on your life in general as a student at a university? And what does that mean? I think I'm happy you covered the issue of the gadgets as well from where I'm sitting, because cost means I must have the gadget to be able to utilize it for effectiveness in terms of the work. If you have a tablet but you do not have a cell phone, it doesn't mean anything. But I think as well, in terms of what does that mean in terms of your studies? Are you able to do work more without this ICT and the providers, for example, iTime, data, are you able to do, or is it, have you moved, can I still paper, you are still on paper as a university? If not, what does that, how does that impact? I think it links to even the issue of, are you able to utilize the facilities at school? Maybe if I don't have a gadget, can I go to the library and use a visit? Would I still be able to have access to the times that it opens and closes? As a young woman in campus, the safety for you to access those libraries, what does that mean? I think just share with us around those lines. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. To answer the first question, well, as students, it's always, and as the Student Representative Council, it's always been our duty to ensure that students have access to the things that they need to ensure that they succeed academically. And from the university's end, it's always been affordability. We cannot afford to buy more computers. We cannot afford to provide students with tablets. We cannot afford. And I think that's been the conversation. I think that's why we're sitting where we are today, because of universities also stating to us that we do not have the money to provide you with the hardware and with the resources that you need. And secondly, answering the second question, you know, when it comes to, I spoke from the perspective of a student in general, but specifically a student at the University of the Western Cape. And we do have Wi-Fi on our campus, but what happens to people who live off campus? What happens to students? Because we have a population of 22,000, and it's only 10% of those students who live on residences. So majority of those students who don't live on res do not have access to Wi-Fi, meaning they face the challenges of having to purchase and to buy data, which is extremely expensive. And answering Umama when she asked about the NASWIS. NASWIS provides me with residences, it provides me with a food voucher, it provides me with my tuition and with books, but it does not provide me with any gadgets. And if you do not have a gadget, you are automatically at a disadvantage. Now, if we look at our institution, 60% of the undergraduate students are on NASFAS. Now, if 60% of our undergraduate students are in Naspers, it means that whole 60% cannot afford, and they're indigent students. So them having being able to afford a gadget is not a necessity, but it's a luxury, looking at their cases and them being indigent students. And to answer you, Chair, I will give you a scenario of something that happened in the past week where we didn't have Wi-Fi for a day. We could not access our course material. We could not email our lecturers. We could not download slides because lecturers now, we are basically on an online system. We do not use paper anymore. So the lectures that we get in class, we could not access. We could not even submit assignments. We could not do research. And the list is long. So we do not have access to ICT and we do not have access to internet per se. Your whole life as a student at the University of the Western Cape, if you do not have data, comes to a standstill. And as a female student, we know the rape culture that's been going around. It's not safe to access the library because the library is on campus and residences are on the other end of the university campus. So it is extremely unsafe for you to access the library at late hours of the night. But besides that, even if you could, our library only closes at midnight. And we have 22,000 students. In our library, we have 150 computers. So looking at that, it cannot carry the capacity of students that we have. And another thing is that I think my biggest worry or my biggest issue has always been we've always had an issue of residences and there not being enough space for students to stay on campus. But the biggest difficulty has been for those who don't live on campus. You know, in townships, In the Western Cape recently, we've had Wi-Fi hotspots, which is nice. But in areas close to universities, we don't have that luxury. So already, if you are a student living off campus, you are at a disadvantage completely. And universities have evolved as ICT has evolved. But the infrastructure and the access that students have to hardware or to ICT has not evolved as much as ICT and the use of ICT in our university sense.
Thank you very much for sharing with us our thoughts. I know it's the most difficult time for you that's why I called in the morning because I was worried that you might not be able to make it. Nomshin, you want to ask something so that
Thank you for that. I understand very much the depth of your anger at your sort of exclusion. How on earth are you supposed to do your job without the basic tools? I don't know. But I'm just wanting to understand the extent of the limits that are provided for you online. What Wi-Fi access is available? Is it capped, can you use as much as you like as long as you're on campus and as long as it's up?
Just one member each. I'm going to close. She's really under pressure.
No, just they're checking. It's a former student. When you're short of something, you think of a campaign of some sort, whereby you ask people to adopt a student, then every month the person buys you a certain amount of data. Are there any campaigns that you are embarking on to try to close the gap? You cannot be closed completely, but just to try something.
Yeah, over to you,
So the access that we have to Wi-Fi is uncapped. But if you look at how many people log on to that, the access goes, the network is very slow, and you can't actually use it to the best of its ability. So it's not capped, but the more people log on to the Wi-Fi, then the less effective that it becomes. Yeah. And then, when it comes to campaigns, you know, we look at order of priority. And we've been pushing a sanitary tiles campaign. So when you say take sanitary tiles and look at data, you like, you know, so you look at priorities and data. When we look at students, especially at the University of the Western Cape, it shouldn't be that we're fighting for access to the internet. It should be provided to us. And, you know, yeah, this time of the year, we've got big struggles. So we could have campaigns, but looking at our priorities and the multiple number of needs that we have as students, we can't really prioritize that.
Thank you very much, Lukanyiso, for sharing with us your story. We wish you all the best. Can you please, guys, don't destroy any properties, please. We are bleeding. As you are leading the SRC, I know you're going back to resolve the issues around this. Our appeal, just say, I'm taking this opportunity because you are here. Please, guys, we are bleeding. No damage to property. We understand your struggle. All the best. You can run in now. Okay, let's get Mr. Dominic Carl to come through and give the presentation. I also understand you're under pressure. Apologies for that. We just wanted, she has to go back and address students before we can see understand some of the issues I did on the challenge. Over to you, sir, so that we don't waste time.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Honourable Members of the Public, and thank you to this portfolio committee for its continued interest in something which is quite clearly from the previous presentation and from what's going on in social media at the moment, an issue which is very real to South Africans. Not going to keep you too long, not going to be too technical, the three central submissions that the Internet Service Providers Association would make, and I find myself in a very surprising position of a lot of it has actually been said before this morning. So if we work with the first slide, We just want to urge the portfolio committee to shift the focus from the cost to communicate in terms of voice calls to the cost of a broadband connection. We believe that aligns better with the targets set out in SA Connect, which have been discussed this morning. It reflects something which was noted in the portfolio committee's report from the previous set of cost to communicate hearings around the growth in data usage, decline in voice usage. It acknowledges that there are increasingly predictions that voice will be a free service at some time in the next 3 to 5 years in South Africa. That's being said quite widely now. Voice was characterized by Dr. Johnston from the CSIR as low bandwidth data. We agree completely. There's no need going forward to look at it as a separate service. And also something that's been talked about a lot this morning, growth in OTT services. I need broadband to access those OTT services. So the focus should really be on cost of access to broadband. Before I leave that slide, just to say that the focus that has to date been placed on call termination rates, particularly mobile termination rates, the reduction of those rates from 1.25 rand all the way down to 11, 12 cents, has been an extremely effective and constructive intervention which this Parliament, the regulator, the department all need to be congratulated for. However, we do not see that there is any great benefit to be derived from the regulator engaging in another exercise of looking at call termination rates. In fact, one thing that the Portfolio Committee may not be aware of is a looming battle around the opposite termination rates, which is origination rates. And I give this example just to illustrate how, if you're not paying attention, costs in terms of communication can get away from you really clearly. ICASA earlier this year passed numbering plan regulations. Part of those numbering plan regulations is to require operators who offer toll-free services to reach agreement with each other about not termination rates, but origination rates. So just to give an example, if I phone Dr. Johnston, I'm on Cell C, he's on Vodacom, then I'm originating the call, Cell C is the originating network, he's on Vodacom, Vodacom is the terminating network. We know with toll-free calls that entities like Lifeline, Gender Violence, Rape Crisis offer toll-free services to South Africans, these 0800 numbers. And the key thing about that is that it must be free to the person calling. And when we start to talk about origination rates, what we're seeing emerge, and the disputes have already been lodged with ICASA, is that the smaller players, and Telkom, I'm not including it, hasn't made its position clear, the smaller players are quite happy to say that even though ICASA hasn't regulated origination rates, it's only regulated termination rates, we will take the termination rate of 12 or 14 cents that you have gone through a Chapter 10 exercise for and arrived at, we will apply that to origination. So for the smaller guy, they're saying, we don't want the people calling toll-free services to bear the cost. We will keep that rate, that origination rate, close to a reasonable cost. The rates proposed by Vodacom and MTN are 1 rand per minute exact. The rate proposed by Cell C is 1 rand 32 ex minute per minute. We need to pay attention to some of these small things that happen, which mean that the cost when someone phones rape crisis on Telkom's 0800 numbers, Telkom will then be required to pay 1.32 to sell. Telkom will then be required to recover 1.32 from rape crisis for that call for every minute that a call is made to it. That cannot be correct. Cell C charges 66 cents as a retail rate. That retail rate covers origination, transmission, and termination. Yet it is approaching us and now telling us that it wants an origination of 1.32. It's not cost-based, it's not cost-related, it's greed and it's profiteering. The second major submission we want to make is, again, one which has been repeated a few times this morning. Where is the best bang for buck intervention that this portfolio could look at? It must be the cost of accessing mobile data. We know we're moving to data. We know that the vast majority of South Africans who love to communicate do so through their mobile phones using a mobile network. We have an affordability gap, not an access gap. Exact words used by the CSIR in the presentation before but one, and something which came out very clearly in the UWC presentation which we've just had. In our view, two very simple factors which are creating that affordability gap. The cost of mobile broadband data and the restriction on the provision of voice over internet protocol services over mobile broadband, which the mobile networks prohibit other operators from doing. Third and final point before I come to some recommendations. There has to be one focus, and I understand that the regulator needs to do an exercise in determining what is a priority market, but it is almost as obvious as the nose on the end of our faces as to what the priority market is. It is access to mobile broadband at the cost thereof. Any program looking at reducing the cost to communicate, effectively having the best bang for buck in a constrained environment where we don't have the resources to chase everything, has to focus on mobile broadband services and the cost to communicate. It makes sense. It will have the largest impact on increasing the uptake of broadband in South Africa in the short term by stimulating competition. By example, and this really goes to what we believe to be the core of the problem, which is the vertically integrated nature of the mobile networks. It is not the custom of ISPA to walk into the portfolio committee and hold Telkom up as an example of how things should be, but that's exactly where I am. When I do business with Telkom as an ISP, it is very clear to me, after the Competition Commission and after penalties and after Telkom has made certain decisions, I know where the Telkom wholesale department is. It's called OpenServe. It's completely separate from the Telkom retail division. I know that when OpenServe provides services to me as an ISP, it is doing so on exactly the same basis as it is providing services to its own ISP, to its own retail division. It is not allowed to discriminate in terms of the wholesale provision services it provides to the next level. My difficulty here is that I do not see the same thing in the mobile networks. There is no separation between the wholesale and the retail such that an ISP is able to go to Vodacom, MTN, or Cell C and say, I want the same deal as you're giving to your retail division. You simply cannot do it. It has not been possible. So service competition is largely absent in the mobile services sector outside of the incumbents. This is notwithstanding that we have seen in the fixed market just how much competition is waiting to get in there. In the last 7 years, underneath Telkom, with its resale model, we have seen through various developments the price per gigabyte fall from 70 Rand to something which is approaching zero. There's one ISP at the moment which gives you free data between midnight and 6 p.m. So the only data you pay for is between 6 p.m. and midnight every day. We've seen going over the last 7 years from everyone having a capped solution, 3 gigabytes, to the standard now being uncapped, affordable uncapped. If we start taking it onto the fiber networks, it's actually ridiculously cheap. But that is only benefiting a very limited footprint of people in South Africa, not the people we should be targeting here. The people we're targeting are using mobile broadband, they're using it increasingly for a wider variety of uses, as we've heard in the previous presentation, which will include their voice calls. It's a generational thing too. My 15-year-old does not ask me to buy him airtime. He asks me to buy data. If he wants to send a voice call to me, he records it as a WhatsApp message, and he WhatsApps that to me. He doesn't call me. He doesn't want airtime. He probably doesn't even know what airtime is, but he knows what data is. Recommendations. Require the mobile networks to offer wholesale solutions. Move away from the vertical integration. When Vodacom as a network service provider, MTN, Cell C as a network service provider is required to offer the same quality of service, the same price to competing ISPs downstream that compete with Vodacom, MTN or Cell C retail, that is when we will see the benefits that we've already seen in the fixed line environment go through to the mobile networks. We create a fully competitive reseller market between the mobile networks as it does under Telkom. To be clear, this is not about sharing spectrum. This is not about wireless local loop unbundling. This is not about any access into the mobile networks. This is about a simple wholesale access model. Retail minus, if you like. The simplest possible thing that can be achieved in very little time would make the biggest difference, we believe. Finally, in that, if as an ISP, if as an alternative telco, as a VoIP provider, I'm seeking to provide VoIP over mobile broadband, I am currently contractually prohibited from doing so when I engage with that mobile network. We believe that's wrong, and if it was turned around, it would reduce costs in terms of voice and data substantially. My apologies to Professor Gilworth, but I'm going to end with this slide. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Prof, I can hear you're being challenged there. Thank you very much for the presentation. Definitely, I'm going to open for hands to ask questions, comments. I see Honorable McKenzie has got, Honorable Shin, Honorable Zotetsi. Any other hand I'm looking at the back? So that, okay. From Right to Know Campaign, I forgot the name, I didn't capture the name correctly. I know, yeah, you'll be the next, those are the hands I've got, no? Okay. Is that the hand up? Okay, you'll be the last one. I wanted to be sure. Well, McKenzie, lead us.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to play the devil's advocate, Mr. Paul. Telkom at one stage had a virtual monopoly on telecommunication services in the country. MTN, Vodacom, and to a lesser extent, Cell C, have invested billions and billions of rands in setting up their networks and rolling out their networks. Haven't they got a right to protect that investment, to deliver a return on investment, and to leverage any competitive advantage they may have in the marketplace in the spirit of free enterprise?
Thank you. Wanted to know, you talked in your papers about the use of unlicensed spectrum in the rural areas, a lot of that. What incentives or market interventions, if you like, need to be applied to encouraging and supporting the rollout of these networks, either through provincial governments, through local governments, or no governments at all? How can we actually support that growth of small enterprises producing or supplying data access via their unlicensed spectrum networks. Then on the split of the mobile operators into wholesale and retail operations, how complex is that to do, and how fast could it be done, do you think? So I'm sure that they'll put up a huge fight about it. So we'd just like to sort of perhaps spike their guns for tomorrow, if you could give us some indication, please.
No,
what's
okay.
Yeah, I think we tried very hard to follow the presentation. That's not the same as this one, but the content is the same anyway. From the presentation here, there's a lot of emphasis on the need for greater competition in the provision of mobile broadband services. You know, for private sector, when they talk competition, most of the time it's about maximization of profit. In your opinion, what do you think should be improved by government to ensure that whatever competition you are referring to is not harmful to the public? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it's Carlos. Yes.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Dominic. I would like to ask you about, I completely agree on your recommendation about separating the wholesale and the retail, and so is in another submission that have been put to the hearing. But why only on the separation between the wholesale and the retail in the data, in the broadband, and not in the voice as well?
Thank you very much. That was Carlos from
I will just go straight to my question. I didn't carry a dictionary along. Ndiyabulela mntana ngaphambili ngethuba uthe wandiphalo nalo thetha. Igama lam ndinguVusisizwe, ifani yam ndingumntu kodwa ndikho ngozodubula mntu namhlanje, ndisazigcina nje imbombolo. I didn't carry a long dictionary for translation, so please guys bear with me. I just wanted to go straight to my question, which was what kind of indicators that should be used to monitor the wholesaler and reseller issue that you were bringing. Yes, thank you, Clara Pamela.
And go see that he was introducing himself. His name is Busimpu. Who in Xhosa it means a gun. So he was just saying that he's not carrying a gun today. He's here to present that he's leaving for the other day. So he's asked the question. I think you've managed to get the question. Thank you very much. Let's proceed. I'm translating because there's no translation in this room for communities.
For that, Honourable Chair, to start off with a question from the devil's advocate, the Honourable Devil's advocate behind me, and it is the kind of question which an advocate for the devil would ask you. You're asking about the investment, and clearly there's a balancing act. And you talk about Telkom's monopoly and how that's been broken over time. When we look at Telkom today and we see the split between wholesale and retail, we trace that back to 2001 in a complaint laid with the competition authorities, or number of complaints laid with the competition authorities by ISPA against Telkom, which resulted 11 years later in 2012 in a number of, well, firstly, Telkom being found guilty of a number of instances of anti-competitive conduct and a fine being imposed. And in the second set of cases, a settlement being reached between the competition authorities and Telkom, in terms of which Telkom adopted functional separation. It separated out the function of wholesale and it separated out the function of retail. Having been essentially forced to that position, Telkom then recognized that that actually worked for it, and it has now, of its own volition, adopted a more fundamental structural separation, which means we now have open serve on the one side and retail on the other side. Telkom, like the mobile networks, has also gone to spend a great deal of public and other money in investment and creating a network which still, notwithstanding various challenges it faces, underpins South African communications. That is Telkom Fiber that does that. It is protecting its investment and leveraging its investment by using what it has. And we would suggest that there's a balance there. We're not asking the mobile networks to forego that. We're asking them to make better use of the capacity they have. If we look just between MTN, Vodacom and Cell C, we will note that one of those three already has a resale program. That's Cell C. It has an MVNO program. The MVNOs which sit on the Cell C network, but not on MTN and not on Vodacom. Why is that? Because it suits Cell C commercially as the latest competitor, as the up-and-comer, to try and bring more traffic onto its network through an MVNO model. What is an MVNO? It's a reseller. An MVNO, in the Cell C sense, goes to Cell C and says, I want to buy bulk minutes of use and I want to buy bulk megabytes and you're going to give me a bulk volume discount. It's that simple. Turning to the Honourable Chin's question in respect of license-exempt spectrum in rural areas, what are the incentives? Really, those are those networks in rural areas, and I think you've heard from the CSIR, and you'll hear more from ZNZN networks and Like to Know tomorrow on these. But essentially, those networks have built up without any assistance. That have exploited the gap between the pricing of the incumbent networks and the demand in those rural areas, and what they are doing is providing fit-for-purpose, robust networks which offer affordable services in those areas. If there's one thing they want from you, it is access to spectrum which can be used for access services, and which, when we look at the presentation from the CSIR, we can see just how much is available in those rural areas. Honourable Tsetsi asked a question about how do we ensure competition isn't harmful to the public, if I understand that correctly. And we clearly need to be cautious that in rushing to reduce the cost to communicate, we don't inadvertently have an impact on investment and quality of service, which could be harmful. But we have in as a focus here, something which is ultimately purely in the benefit of the public, which is reducing the cost to communicate. We have a regulator, we have a National Consumer Commission, we have other entities, we have this portfolio committee, which steps in to protect consumers if they feel like competition is going too far. So I understand that there would need to be care taken in certain respects, but all we are saying is split. Make it clear where the wholesale is, make it clear where the retail is, implement non-discriminatory access for all parties from the wholesale, and that by itself will engender competition and bring prices down. Other entities will step in and deal with protection of consumers where that's necessary. The question from Carlos Zenzaveni, that was just not clear speaking on my part. The separation should be in respect of both data, broadband, and voice. And then the man without a gun from the Right to Know campaign, for which I'm grateful. I'm not clear on how to answer the question about the indicators that should be used for retail and wholesale split. But maybe if I just outline the idea again, you know, it's there's a difference between the physical network and the services which flow over it. So when we look at Vodacom's network, we typically see a whole bunch of towers. We know that those towers are connected to Vodacom's core network either through microwave frequency links or through fiber in the ground which goes to that tower. That network and the spectrum is essentially the service that is being provided is making available capacity on that network for others to use to provide services. So Telkom rolls out fiber in a particular area, it then says, hey, to all the ISPs, I'm now making capacity on this fiber available for all the ISPs on an open access basis to come and compete for customers that they can reach through this fiber network. So in terms of indicators, it's really more about open access. It's really about something which we as ISPA believe was fundamentally written into the Electronic Communications Act, which was the intention of Parliament in finalizing the licensing framework under the Electronic Communications Act, was to have a clear split between the network service, the physical network service which carries packets and makes that available to communication services, the retail services which you and I as members of the public actually receive. But we see that split with Telkom, we see that split elsewhere in the market, we do not see that split in the mobile networks, and we believe that is the critical intervention.
Thank you very much. In your submission, there are quite a number of things. I noted on Dongen, I'm going to come to you. But you speak on the wireless broker loop unbundling. How do you see that assisting in reducing the cost? And with the challenge currently, because we've been waiting for the local loop unbundling of how do you see this happening? Is it not going to be one of the long roads that we take? Then the other issue you speak about is open access network. In terms of, but as well speak about promoting competition. Now, if we are to go the route of open access network, almost it will result in infrastructure sharing. Where do we see the competition happening? And how that competition will assist in reduction of the cost or having the cost to the level that we want to see. For me, that is very important. I see, because you're talking about the infrastructure sharing and all that, so it's quite important for me to understand that point. Then the issue of broadband rollout. I'm trying to find the slide. I think it's your last point in your submission. Where you highlighting it is imperative that South Africa take steps now to allow the deployment of technologies which are spectrally efficient and suitable for broadband services provisioned in rural areas. Just to understand what are you seeing here and how do you see this being achieved? Would understand the difficulty in terms of resources from government in order to roll out broadband. I mean, if you've looked at the government's department's broadband rollout plan over years, with the target, we're now talking the target of 2020. Now we have communities that are saying today we are impacted upon. Now, how do we deal with that? What is your view around that process in terms of rollout? But even the issue, because where we're sitting at the portfolio committee, we've got a challenge whereby the department does not have necessary enough funds to be able to roll out. Phase one is very clear. It's allocated with the funds. Phase two, they're still trying to find the funds. Now, with that as well in mind, and though the intention to roll out broadband across the country, how do you see the proposals that you are putting through of the unbundling of the separation of retail and wholesale, open access network, how do you see that assisting us? There could be a view from the current operators to say, if you are to take this option, we are not able to guarantee our return, and therefore we can't put more investment into the infrastructure, which would eventually leave the burden to government, which you know, with the fiscal constraint, might have challenges. So I just want to see, to hear from ISPA's point of view, how do you see this unfolding broadly? Honourable again, you wanted to ask something?
No, Chair, thanks. You covered me with the second question. Thank you very much.